Darren, does this shirt make me look fatic?
Fatic.
P-H-A-T-I-C, fatic. How's it going? Yes, I am doing quite well.
Okay, very nice.
There's bad weather outside
really
today.
All you need to tell me.
It's been raining in Florida. There's the first couple of minutes of another podcast I do. We always try to get an update from someone, and it usually has nothing to do with what the rest of the show is about. And it's very interesting to think about that. Here we are in the first minute of this show, talking about having a conversation about nothing,
Conversation fatigue. Fatigue.
So there, just this is your vocabulary word of the day, phatic communication.
P-H-A-T-I-C.
It literally means things that don't convey information, such as what's up, how are you, you're welcome at the end of thank you. It doesn't really say much.
There's a lot of phatic material in life today. Phatic symbols everywhere you look. And, it's part of the death of meaning. Now we have... I don't know what I'm talking about.
Are you going to get on a soapbox in a minute?
I'm actually a little bit serious about the fact that, I guess, extending phatic into things that are that you see around you in life, and just the kind of like the insincerity. And I'm not saying that phatic means insincere, but there's a lot of just things that are said just to be said, and not advancing the conversation. And I think that there are things to be seen just to be seen, and not advancing.
Okay, how about this? At the beginning of a YouTube video, there's like, hey guys, or okay guys, or hey viewers.
How's everybody doing today?
Like, I can answer that question, and you can actually, answer it back, given that you're on a recorded media and I'm on, 3,000 miles away, or
right.
5 years later.
Right. I have to pause so I can answer the question.
Right.
So that's our vocabulary word of the day.
Yeah.
All right.
It comes up from a discussion that some very smart people I know of were having about sort of building communities and quote-unquote managing communities, sort of like inspiring people in communities to interact with each other and take some action and have squirrels crawling on the roof or whatever it was that sound just was. They were talking about all this stuff. It was a podcast they did for a couple of years called TummelVision.tv, T-U-M-M-E-L. And some people that were involved, one was a stand-up comedian, one was like a social media marketing person, and the other one is like a computer programmer / community organizer who now is kind of involved with people on the internet taking their publishing back to their own personal website, their own personal domain, instead of having it only live on Twitter or only live on these social networks. So, really interesting. You can go back and listen to a lot of the shows, and while there is some timely stuff in there, there's a lot of stuff in there that's just sort of like talking about the way the world has changed now that we have the internet and some of these newer social innovations that sort of came around in the information age. Mm-hmm. Things that make you smarter about yourself instead of just sending you a marketing message and then you can decide what to do with it. We now have things like Twitter analytics. Twitter sends me an email every week that says 126 people looked at your tweet and 35 of them clicked on your link. And it says, wow, great photo. And like, basically there's an algorithm telling me great photo just because my most popular tweet of the week happened to contain a photo. There's all these things where you can now sort of, have your own navel-gazing moment that a computer is helping you to, feel special.
A little bit of phaticness in that, too.
Right?
Thank you, computer, for telling my photo is so lovely.
Yeah. So it's just interesting state of affairs, I think, right now. There's also a web application that you can use if you have, you know, one social media account or 12, you can plug in your credentials to this, and it gives you not only, hey, this was your most, you know, popular tweet of the week, but it can also tell you that if you use a lot of words like I, me, myself, it can tell you a certain percentage of your posts are about you, and a certain percentage of your posts contain links, meaning they're probably about someone else. And a certain percentage contain photos, or a certain percentage contain quotation marks, meaning you're probably quoting someone else, or have positive words or negative words. So you can sort of apply machine learning to things you're doing in a, quote, big data kind of a way. But it's not just for businesses. Everybody can take advantage of big data practices, even on your small data. So these are this is your food for thought.
Okay.
More food for thought being what Darren has in his notebook.
The notebook.
The notebook.
Kevin Costner. We've been talking, and even the last podcast episode we did, we were talking about this phenomenon of the gappers and what it means to be a gapper. And I am trying to go back into the research element of that and look at how I can theoretically organize my thoughts around some sort of information visualization and looking at the dynamics that makes someone closer or further from a traditional work structure when I'm thinking about gappers and work and their work roles. I can remember in graduate school when I was really into the social psychology and trying to figure out how to model how we navigate the world. Do you remember a game called Defender? It might have been before your time.
Well, give us the elevator speech.
So Defender, you have this little spaceship thing, and you've got it's almost like you're navigating like it's not a cave, but it's like stalactites and stalagmites that are, you know, at the top and the bottom, and you're trying to, sometimes it's more, it's a narrower passage, and sometimes it's a wider passage. And so I was looking at it that, you know, that's kind of what your social structure is, your opportunity structure, if you will, of like sometimes you don't have as much latitude to move your spaceship, so to speak, high or low, that you have to really be in a tight passage. And sometimes the world opens up to you, and you've got more flexibility for where you traverse.
So this is like a, if you can picture it, like a side scrolling.
Yes.
Your ship is side. Facing sort of to the right, meaning forward. You're moving up and down to like navigate the terrain and avoid obstacles. And sometimes you could choose the upper path or the lower path, but you can kind of only choose one, right?
Yeah, and it's almost, sometimes, if I remember correctly, it's usually just like one, it's one path. It's just like wherever the
but you can sort of get like funneled into
yes.
certain things.
Right? And so I was looking at, okay, so that's the society, you know, the model of society and the opportunity structure that you traverse as a human. And then looking at what your ship is, being yourself, and the way that ship is constructed and the qualities that you have that allow you to move in a dexterous way in certain times and, you know, a slow, challenging way in other times. So anyway, I never really like took that all the way to the extreme, but that was the closest thing because I was thinking about, okay, well, then you see this happening, you know, in a micro fashion where you're having things happen day by day that influence where you're going. But if you back up and look at it in a big picture type way, you can kind of look at your path, trace your path back through life and see those periods where, okay, well, I just got out of college and I didn't have a lot of money, but, you know, I had some connections and
So this might be why I was influenced this way and why I took my, why I was able at some point, maybe I got some sort of external boost that allowed me to take the higher path in some way, and then slowly build my way up through that. And then something external happens, you know, 2008, the economy goes down. And so then, you know, I go down and everything else goes down with it for a while, and figure out a way of getting back up again. So, so anyway, it's been interesting to me lately, as I get more and more into my design world, through my job at Full Sail and what I teach, I've been really thinking about information visualization and how that can kind of marry together with a lot of the academics and theoretical things that I've been working on. Because in an ideal way, I would be able to have enough perspective that I could actually show my theories in a way that effectively communicates them, versus telling them or writing, you know, writing long papers and things like that that aren't going to be as likely to be absorbed.
Okay, that's so we're talking about now. Your ability to navigate a social environment, and sometimes you have more leeway and sometimes you don't. Are we talking about now? We're talking about the gappers?
Well, so now I'm like coming back around to these like grand model type things. And so what I'm looking at is how I can visualize what it is to be a gapper and what dimensions that were measured on this. So if you're in a work role as a gapper, the way I would look at that is like people who are not tethered to a traditional job of some sort. And jobs have a lot of different dynamics to them, including a workspace, a place, and you know, it brings together coworkers and that sort of thing. The time, so the scheduling that you spend, and then the role, the title you have, and the where you are in a hierarchy and structure, pay, and that sort of thing. So now I'm looking at all the different people that I know from all walks of life, who when I talk to them about the notion of the gapper, and they come to this realization like, hey, I'm a gapper. And they're not all aligned in any way. And so it's been interesting to try to figure out what that visually looks like. And I go back to kind of like my chemistry days in high school and thinking about the nucleus and the electrons going around. But that's not really what it is. But this whole idea of like a spherical approach is what I'm looking at now. And so you've got the X, Y, and the Z axes. And I'm trying to identify what those axes are and how to represent, how to map somebody in this whole gapper world so they can say, hey, I'm a C quadrant gapper to this power.
If you're really far into one kind, then you are, you know, up and to the left and to the back, right?
Right, right.
And if you're really far in another direction, you could be down and to the right and to the front.
Right.
So everybody fits on this cube somewhere.
Yes. And so what I am then trying to say is that up to now, people are so opposite from each other. I mean, they're such at these extremes of the cube or the sphere or whatever you want to call it, that there's not a cohesiveness amongst them. But if you can look at it in a 3D type way, you can see that there is a cohesiveness in the fact that they're all a distance from that traditional core expectation of a job. And so finding that shared spatial relationship to the norm, if that makes any sense, can be a way of developing an affinity group and having people say, hey, we're all outside of this, even if we happen to be totally different sides of it. You know, if one of us is right top middle and the other one is left bottom
right
depth or whatever, then
well,
then
yeah,
suddenly,
even if you just think about if having a regular job is the center of one of those lines, then yeah, if I'm dead center here, I can still go all the way up and down or all the way left and right and still remain dead center on the third line.
Right, right. So now I'm trying to figure out what dimensions, if I narrow this down to three axes, you know, what these axes are, and then what qualities can help make up each one of those axes. So if there are like five different factors. So one of the things I've been playing around with is like this, the stakes or how much of a, like an investment that do you have in something? Well, you know, we talked a little bit before about the musicians I studied in Nashville and how just by going to Nashville, they're upping the ante because they're in a place that identity, that work role is really important to them. But it's also a place where people who are very successful are, and there's a lot of people trying to get into that successful.
So then part of the question is being in the city, does that put you really far to one side, or does that put you in the center? It's a good question, right?
Yeah, it's hard to answer because you're there, you're in the arena, so that's a plus, but you're not in the structure, you're not in, you know, in the system. So if you look at it like a pyramid,
right,
or something like that, I mean, you're at the base of the pyramid. At least you're there.
Right.
It's not like you're,
yeah,
you know, on an island somewhere.
Yeah. There's another question too. Is like, is there an ideal? You know, is there something that everyone, or let's not use the word everyone, but that a lot of people are all working toward? You know what I mean? Are they on the far left side and trying to get to the center? You know what I mean? Which way are they being pulled?
And that's why this whole idea of plotting it over time is kind of interesting to me because, you know, even in our last podcast conversation, we talked about your being pulled toward or thinking about doing a more full-time job for a while or, you know, for whatever time it might be. And but that is something that you are striving toward right now or thinking about for whatever combination of factors, but that might not have been a goal at all before or the last, you know, 10 years. So we change what our ambitions are in the times that we need those safe harbors or we need more structure, and sometimes we get into the structures and we're like, yeah, maybe we don't need this as much as we thought, or we get enough extra bonus conditions going on in our lives that we can take more risk.
Well, and even in that, I think you're still talking about my like primary breadwinning role, as it were.
Right. Right.
Even when I am doing something that makes me $0, I still feel like it applies in some way. I do a lot of different things, right? I was involved at Urban Rethink for a long time. I have now produced a couple of theater shows in the Fringe Festival, but for years before I produced the shows, I was participating in the community. And sometimes like as a journalist and then more as just like a community cheerleader type of person, because
right,
I realized that being a journalist is not really my thing. And in the perspective that most people think of, if you're a journalist and you're in the theater, you must be doing theater reviews, right? And even me, naively, when I first started, I thought I was going to be writing reviews. And then I realized really quickly that I don't care about whether something's good or not.
Right.
I want to know the story behind it. And so then I got there, and then at some point I just said, like, I don't want to be sitting on the sidelines anymore. I want to be right in the middle. I want to produce a show. So producing a show, it sort of like came out of being a member of the community and that like desire to want to be sort of like more on the inner circle came from having watched it and then going like, I want to take myself out of the cheerleader / spectator and I want to move into the creator role for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say there's similar things too. Like if you talk about people that do startup companies, there's tons of people that like watch startup companies or they go to these events where there's lots of these entrepreneurial type people. But then there are points, and it might be a few days long if you're talking about a startup weekend event. It might be a few months long if you're talking about actually trying to launch a company. It might be a few years long if you actually get into launching the startup. But then at a certain point, you transition out of startup mode and you go into more traditional company mode, right? You just, like, because there is that pull to either grow to a certain point or to abandon the project because you're really good at starting things, you're not really good at maintaining them. So the company either has, you have to go with it and basically sell out, or you have to leave it and give the reins to someone else. So there are always those, like, points where you can decide to turn left or turn right. And that would change your role, or you'd sort of, like, start back at ground zero again.
So if we go back into this Defender model of things, and you're the spaceship, you know, you're kind of, it's almost like a little spherical spaceship type thing that you move around your view based on where you are in that role. And some people have a singular role and purpose, and hey, I am a surgeon, and this is what I do. And then some people have 13 different, you know, work related hats that they wear, and so they're going to put on a different hat. I'm throwing metaphors every which way, but based on whatever set of conditions. And so once you put on that different hat, then now you're shifting your ship, and as you shift your ship, the conditions shift as well around you.
And you know, if I end up moving across the country and I own a house here, then I'll have to put on my landlord hat.
Landlords need landlord hats.
Yes.
I'm looking into landlord hats these days.
We'll try to find the link to that so you guys understand what the hell we're talking about. Sorry. You left it open for me.
We're gonna find that link.
You left it open for me. I think there can be more than one, but I think with anybody there's gonna be a primary. Right? You have to pick one. And I think there are certain times in certain people's lives when all of a sudden they find themselves being a parent and they go, I have to put three or four of these other things on hold because now I have to worry about raising my kids and you know, belonging to my family more so than this other thing, whatever that happens to be. Right? I see that happen to people, and then they sort of like disappear for a little while and then they come back.
Well, and that's certainly something that I've experienced myself. I mean, one of the reasons that for a couple of decades after college that, you know, I was mostly independent is because I really loved the different work things that I was doing, and not necessarily jobs, but just whether it be creating a film or a website or graduate school or any number of things that I was enjoying so much. I did not have room in my life for putting that off to the side because I really wanted to follow these ambitions and pursue them. And so in the last year and a half or so, as I have shifted now pick up kids from school every now and then, it's a different reality and kind of grappling with that of, okay, well, I've got a full-time job and I've got thoughts about big projects that have been in my background and also, you know, on the horizon, and now family world too. It does become a constant challenge of like how do you move forward with the passions that you have endeavor wise, but also enjoy and appreciate and savor the passions that you have interpersonally.
Yeah. And just because we're talking about it in just this way, I started thinking about if you were to ask someone on a survey, I would always put X in front of Y. And you said, you know, all things being equal, would you always put work in front of family or family in front of work? I don't think there is one answer. You know, I kind of like started with like, oh no, well you would always say family, right? And then I'm like, well, but your family, part of the whole idea there is that there's the support structure.
Yeah.
That your family cannot exist in a vacuum. But then I started thinking about it the other way. Well, the business cannot exist in a vacuum either. If you're the only person that can solve this problem, you might want to consider changing the way you run your business, right? Hmm. If you can't run your business and your family, I'm not saying in the same way, but if you cannot ignore business as easily as you could ignore family, then you probably have a problem.
Yes.
And then we weighed a bee.
This is a talk about anybody in this room, by the way.
No. I don't have a specific example in mind.
Right.
I think that is an interesting test to run on yourself, especially if you have, you know, a position of power in some way, that if you can't trust your team to get things done without you, kind of thing. And I think when we talk about, you know, communities, right, or businesses as communities, I think we kind of brought this up a little bit. When you talk about having a distributed company, right? Mm-hmm. One of my friends just recently started working for a distributed company, and he lives in Gainesville, and they have a couple of other people that live in Southwest Florida. But then, like, if there is a home for this company, it's in Connecticut. But they have people in Germany, and they have people in Canada, and they have people on the West Coast of the United States, and sort of all over the world that is the community of this company. You know, they have certain projects different people work on, whatever, but I would say that if the CEO of the company wanted to take a week off, he is pretty comfortable in the fact that the work will continue while he leaves, right? It does not require him standing there and spinning plates, and I think part of the reason why that's so easy is because it is a distributed company. The people are used to getting things done without somebody standing over their shoulder all the time and pointing at them. So it's got to be easier in that kind of situation than maybe a lot of other places.
I think back to when we were doing potentials and, you know, trying to develop from an entrepreneurial perspective, trying to develop this whole website world and the company that surrounds that. And really, even though I had a team, still kind of being at the center of that team, and I had an opportunity to go to Australia for a month. And as I, you know, even a year afterward, I'm like, why didn't I do this? Mm. Why didn't I find a way to do this? But at that time, it really was like, okay, well, if I go away, this project is not going to sustain itself. It can't really. It'll just pause and very likely slip into.
So here's what I would say about that specifically, right? In that situation, there was a lot of the plan that was in your head, right? Or that was not expressed in a way that you could even write it down.
Right.
Because it was sort of like moment to moment, not every single thing, right? There were just certain things that were really hard to say, like, this will always be true. Because it was changing all the time. And that actually is, I would say, is part of a problem, too, that, like, if you can't even leave for a month, you know what I mean, then maybe it's time to sit down and do some long-term planning.
Yeah.
It's not a criticism, it's a lesson to be learned, right? I've certainly been guilty of the exact same thing. Somebody would ask me, well, can you write a plan for our social media? And I would go, well, I don't know, you just post what you need to post at the right time. And they go, like, no, can you write us a set of rules that says when X happens, post X, and when Y happens, post Y? And I go, I don't really know how to do that. I don't know how to do that in a way that I could teach it to someone else. And so there's a sign that probably this thing is not that much of a priority for me, and that I'm not the right person to write a long-term plan in that case, right? I think for other things, it might be easier. And in this case, I'm talking specifically about at Urban Rethink. And I don't feel like the kinds of things that would happen on a regular basis at Urban Rethink, the day they were asking me to do this plan, like, you know, like, let's say that this was a month before we opened, right? And somebody said, can you write us a social media plan? And I'm going, no, because I have no idea what this thing is. And if you say, okay, well, I could I come up with some scenarios and then write them down? Yeah, but as soon as we started running, most of those scenarios go out the window, right? Because we start introducing the community, which didn't really exist before we opened, and the community changes everything. So until the community gets its own identity, it's really hard to plan for what happens when the community does this, or what happens when somebody asks for this, or what happens when, you know, we want to react to this external force that's coming in. You know, it was really hard to do at that time.
Yeah, when I'm in my sociology head. I think about like even social movement theory and the idea of resource mobilization and knowing what your resources are help your strategies and help the other interested parties in making things happen. And so what was interesting about that endeavor was that the resources evolved. I mean, the resource could change with one person walking into the door,
mm-hmm.
or one person walking out of the door, and it could change in a dramatic sense. But we were so lean with what we had access to, and time, and money, and different things like that, that it was very, very difficult to make a long-term plans and projections and try to say, okay, this is exactly what we're going to do, and let's go forward full steam ahead. And then suddenly something happens 3 days later that, you know, that takes that trajectory into a whole different world.
Well, and then you start to realize that not having those long-term plans can actually stop you from getting other kinds of resources, like sponsorships. And you want to be able to say, like, you know, such and such a company will sponsor this event for the following year. But this event right now is so dependent on this person being involved. And if that person leaves, we don't have a succession plan.
Right.
You know what I mean? So it sort of like creates a bunch of dominoes that you have to set up in order to be able to push them down. And if you're missing one of those dominoes, then somebody in your community has to step in and fill in the gap. And it can't be the same person every time because people get burned out. And I have to say, like, I think everybody that was there was the missing domino a number of times, right?
Yeah.
I would be sitting there volunteering, watching the front desk, and somebody would show up an hour early for their event, and they'd say, like, hey, I'm ready to set up for my thing. And I would go, well, I don't know anything about your thing. I'm just the volunteer. And then, you know, an hour later, the person who's kind of being paid to be there shows up, and says, okay, what's going on? And I go, well, I've already set up their table and their microphone and their projector because they were here. Mm-hmm. And they were ready to go. And they didn't want to be told, well, you have to wait an hour. I guess I could have told them that. But there was no, like, manual.
There you are behind the desk.
Yeah, there was no manual that says tell them no. There was no manual that says tell them to wait. It was like, you want them to have a good experience because you want them to be able to come back the next time.
Yeah.
And there was one time in particular where turns out we had double booked the space, and I don't really remember what all of the details of it were, but needless to say, we got a phone call from those people the next day saying, we'll never come back. And I don't know that that's the right reaction either, saying we'll never come back, knowing what you know.
Right.
And especially for a space that unique in that unique of a location with, you know, there were so many things about it that were so special that it was, I felt it was really hard to make like a broad generalization judgment based on 2 hours of experience. But people do that, right? And
right.
So then there's, it becomes this question. Are you a community or are you a business? Are you an event space or are you, you know, this like blob of jello? And I think it was different things to different people.
Yeah. So there's that.
but I think this all goes back to the point of saying, if you can't leave it for a week, then how are you going to deal with it if you get sick or if you get hit by a bus? You know what I mean? Then what? And if you say, well, then it dies, then that's probably not a good answer. You know, even when Jay Leno decides to retire, they find a replacement for him. Because that business of putting something on at 11:30 at night will continue. That's an institution. I think they still even call it the Tonight Show, right?
Yes.
So regardless of who's at the helm, that is a thing.
I'm doing a lot of reflecting. And that's part of the challenge of being, you know, independent, and whether it's your own boss or you're entrepreneurial or whatever the case might be, you do have more weight and responsibility on those things as opposed to being tied into some sort of a big work structure where
You know, like, as an example, as an employee of Full Sail, when I got called for jury duty, I was able to go off to do my jury duty and you know, get compensated for some of those days. Had I not been working at Full Sail and, you know, I'm running Urban Rethink or something like that, and I get this jury duty thing, now I can, there is a provision that you can say my business cannot go on without my day-to-day participation in it. But that's not a guarantee. And right. So you really can, you know, get sunk as an independent for a certain amount of time anyway.
And what if you were in the Casey Anthony trial and you were there for weeks? You know, I can only imagine.
Yeah. Anyway, those are the kind of things that, you know, I've been trying to model. And I guess when I look, my question for you, which I'm going to selfishly answer myself first for me, is like, what's on the horizon? And I think, you know, my horizon is getting a little bit deeper into the whole the Gapper model and continuing to work on that book and then trying to figure out some metrics for plotting and better understanding and information visualization type models of these theories. That's where I'm headed for the next few weeks.
Well,
what about you?
Mine comes from, I think, a regret / goal. It's like one of those things that I wish I had started doing 5 years ago, basically, which is when I look at what I've been working on in the last 6 years, how many of the things that I've done could I have turned into a contribution back to open source software, as that is my primary role, right? Mm. I'm a programmer first, I guess you would say, at least for now. And if I am a programmer first, and especially open source one, that's a really big part of my identity, what open source contribution have I made other than organizing events and organizing community? Because when you want to pick up your geography and go somewhere else, it is okay to say, I was really involved with the community and organizing this event and, you know, making sure people felt welcome. That's cool, but it's not very concrete. The concrete stuff transfers so much easier. Unless there are people from, I'm going to make up a city. If you're, let's say I'm going to Washington, D.C., and there are people in Washington, D.C. that have been to Florida Drupal Camp, they go, oh, that guy, he's at Florida Drupal Camp. We totally know who he is.
Yeah.
But if you go somewhere and the people who are there have never heard of you, your reputation doesn't come with you, then what do you have to show them? You have your GitHub page or you have your Drupal.org page or you have your podcast portfolio. But all of those things mean something different to different people.
They're markers.
Right. So where is my code marker?
Hmm.
And I was talking to people and I'm going like, well, it's a little spread out and it's a little fuzzy over here. And I feel like I do lots of contribution, but probably not as much as other people. You know, a lot of mine tends to happen face to face. It's hard to measure that.
Yeah. You don't get trophies for that or badges necessarily.
Well, there was the Ryan Price Unsung Heroes Award.
Yes, there was.
I think I actually put that on my LinkedIn profile, if I'm not mistaken.
That the award was named after you?
Yeah. if it's not, I remember thinking that I should put it up there. That there was a thing that we used to have at a club I was in college. They would call it the Distinguished Service Key, and they gave it to certain people who had done some sort of a thing. But then they had another thing they called the Namesake Award. And basically, every year when the new crop of freshmen would enter the university, they had what they considered their cohort, their class of fresh young faces coming into the club. And as a way of differentiating 2011 from 2012, from spring 2011 and spring 2012, they give those, the class, they called it, they give the class a name. And so every year when they have the award ceremony, they give out the namesake award, meaning next year's class will be named after you.
Huh.
Next year will be the Rich Cherry class, or the Peter Brown class, or the, I'm trying to remember actually the one that was the name of mine, the Russ Shaw class was my class. And every club has a different way of doing this, but this was something that they had come up with as a way of honoring someone who had given this great support to the group, and they wanted to recognize that. So basically, now everyone that was new that year, they can remember that they were in the Russ Shaw class.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember who got the Ryan Price Unsung Heroes Award?
I do. Yeah, you know, somebody else who was very deserving of their own award.
Right.
And I think that was something that you were planning to do when you invented the award, was that the next year's award would be named after the person who recently received it, right?
Yeah, it was a way of kind of catching up for some lost time by doubling up. There were so many deserving candidates, so by doubling up some of them and naming them after the person you're essentially giving two
right.
awards.
Right. Even so, like, just that idea that somebody has given to this community so much that we want to name something after them.
Mm-hmm.
That can be just a really important recognition, and that recognition is part of the currency.
Yes.
Currency that is hard to measure. So we're going to measure it by naming something after you.
Writing down currency.
Currency.
Cultural currency.
Yeah.
Is a factor of something. It is a part of a reward for.
Whereas
work roles.
Phatic communication has no cultural currency.
How's it going?
It is going 44 minutes.
Well, I'd say 44 minutes is about right.
Yeah, Darren, I think we asked this at the end of last week, but let's read it out again, just so that we can. Drive it home, even though there is no website there right now. Where can people go for more information about the Gappers?
Well, if I were one of those people and I was listening to this and it was 2015, I would definitely go to thegappers.com.
Thegappers.com, under construction.
Under construction, just getting ready to launch. Well, I don't know. It's there. It's real.
Hey, the domain name is actually pointed at something now.
There's structure there. We just have to build the flesh.
Right.
The face of it.
It's one of those, like, setting up the first domino, but actually you have to set up the 10 dominoes before the first domino. Right? There's some one of those metaphors that we use from today.
Yeah.
Wearing your website owner hat versus your, you know, going through the cave in your spaceship or whatever it happens to be.
Caves and spaceships. We'll have to find a link to Defender, so maybe that'll make some more sense to somebody with some visuals. All right, thank you.
And yeah, if you want to follow up with me, probably one place where I do have a fair amount of currency is it the Drupal Easy podcast.
Yes.
Drupal spelled D-R-U-P-A-L, which is a very technical show for the most part. If you're not interested in Drupal, you're not going to get that much out of it.
What's up with Liberator.net these days?
Right now, Liberator.net, it is any podcasts that I'm a part of producing, it is an aggregator of all of those podcasts. So this podcast shows up on the homepage of Liberator.net just as a way of saying, hey, there was another one.
Liberator.
Right.
.net.
I actually just ordered business cards and I put on there InvisibleFrisbee.net because that's a little bit more recent of something that I was working on, and I plan to put like this podcast, which is right now we're calling it the Our Yellow House podcast,
mm-hmm.
and the Bringing Art into Technology Together podcast and the Drupal Easy podcast, all on there as like current productions, along with my Fringe Festival productions that are kind of hosted there. So you can go check those out, whichever one of those domain names, but I think mostly right now ouryellowhouse.com, where you can find past episodes that Darren and I have recorded, over something like the last 5 or 6 years. Was like the first one we did was, I think, at least 4 years ago. At least one really, really recent one. Which, really recent meaning, right now we just started October 2014. So there was one that was in the middle of September. Go check it out.
Cheers.